So welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming this morning. So what I'd like to do is continue the last several times that I've been here, sort of having a little bit of a summer interlude and looking at some very pithy but simple sayings, stories from poems from the Zen tradition, Chinese, Japanese. Zen. I think a month ago we looked at the story of the bird's nest monk. It was quite a wonderful short story, very instructive. And then last time we looked at... what did we look at? Something about letting go or getting dragged. Either we let go or we get dragged, and... whether we understand things clearly or whether we don't understand things clearly, things are just what they are, either way. And there were a few others. I guess they're all on the web and they can be listened to. So there are three of them I want to look at today and see if we can tie them together. I'll just read them first, and then there'll be time at the end for any questions. Obviously, we are accessing these wonderful sayings or teachings from our tradition, but wanting to really see their relevance and immediacy and meaning for our modern lives. So the first is a quote from one of the great minds of the Buddhist tradition in Japan, Dogen. And he said, "You should stop pursuing words and letters, and learn to withdraw and reflect on yourself. When you do so, your body and mind will fall away naturally, and your original Buddha nature will appear." And then the other two are much shorter. The first is sort of a poem. "Sitting quietly, doing nothing, spring comes, grass grows by itself." And then the third is, "To cry and not to be carried away by tears, to laugh and not to be carried away by laughter, this is the way." So we'll see if we can understand this. So Dogen's is a little, the last two are a little more poetic. But Dogen's is really in the form of a very direct teaching to us. He says you should stop pursuing words and letters. Do we know what that is? Which means for many of us, our pursuit of a spiritual life is often primarily involved with reading. Listening to talks. And that's what he means when he says that is the pursuit of words and letters. Opposed to that, he says, "And learn to withdraw and reflect on yourself." So this is important, so important, and again, you've heard me say it before, but we have to hear it over and over, because we have to understand, and this is often, again, a very frustrating thing to many people. Not just in the Buddhist tradition, other traditions, whether they're reading the Bible or the Quran or other types of spiritual religious books, they wonder, even though they read these things, study these things, go to church, temple, mosque, etc., why is it that even though I am doing all these good things, thinking about and reading about all these good ideas, involving myself with good works, there are many good works that one could become involved in, why is it that the truth is in my own mind, things are not changing? Maybe the rough edges are have gotten a little less rough. Maybe the hardness has softened a bit. But we often find, we are still driven by our conditioning. Our mind still more or less has the same type of thoughts, and we still have the same kind of emotional storms moving through us. Why is that, right? And I think what we're being shared here is because transformation, change, which is about what this is path is about. A spiritual path is a path of, Thich Nhat Hanh calls it healing and transformation, or a path traditionally of awakening, of liberation as freedom, means that we are changing, that we are becoming free of our conditioning. We are becoming free of our habitual mind, our habitual way of thinking and acting and feeling. Something is significantly changing. That is why we are undertaking this process. Not simply to cope a little better, not simply to be a little gentler version of our old self. But again, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, that's the world is better off because we are that way. But if we're really seeking the benefits of a spiritual path, Dogen is saying we should stop pursuing words and letters. Again, it doesn't. We are all here because of words and letters, right? So words and letters often get us to the door, which is good. But if we want to enter the gate, words and letters are not enough, because the real work has to go on within our own minds. That's where it's all taking place, isn't it? All our emotions, our positive emotions, our negative emotions, our happiness, our joy, our loving kindness, our compassion, our angers, our fears, our jealousies, unhappinesses, etc., are all occurring within our mind. The thoughts that bother us. For some people, the thoughts that torture them. The dramas and melodramas that endlessly we obsess about. They're all going on where? In our minds. And so until we stop and enter the terrain of our own mind with this intention to understand and to heal and transform the benefits, the real benefits of a spiritual path will always be elusive, and that can often lead to a frustration. That can often lead to doubt. Does this thing really work? Why am I doing this? I'm putting all this time and energy into it, and yet, nothing's really changing. And often that's the case because we're really not putting the effort into where it has to be put. And that's right here. And that's often the last place we look. because it's often the place that we're really least comfortable with. It is often the place we feel least at home. It is often the place where it doesn't come easy. And we like things to come easy. We like to get it right away. We like things to happen right away. That's why we love we love psychopharmacology, we love drugs and alcohol, we love the internet, we love all the games and the attractions, because it's immediate. We get immediate relief. But that immediate relief obviously is only short term. But it's easy and it's quick. This takes time, right? To stop. And as Dogen says, to withdraw. Withdraw doesn't mean that we have to go off to the mountains or anything, but we, in meditation, we pull back from always looking out, from always being concerned about what's going on out there, from always that being the endless obsession of our mind, the addictions of our mind. And we withdraw and we look at he or she that is doing the rumination. He or she that is feeling all the things. And we begin to reflect on oneself. And again, this is why in Buddhism, mindfulness, concentration, meditation, this is why these are the central practices, because these practices deal with just what we're talking about. They are the technology through which human beings for thousands of years have accomplished this turning within. Many people don't have a clue, do they, about how to turn within, how to look within oneself. I mean, we know the words. Just the same way people have the words, you know, I need to learn to stop and smell the roses, right? I mean, everybody says that these days. But most people don't know how to do that. Right. So we should stop pursuing words and learn to withdraw and reflect on oneself. Reflect on oneself does not mean judge ourselves, criticize ourselves. It's not that kind of reflection. It's a very objective reflection. It's a willingness to really look within, to really see the state of our minds and to understand clearly what is it within my mind. See, we're always looking out and going, what is it outside myself that is the cause, you know, that gives me happiness, or what is the thing outside myself that's causing me unhappiness, right? So we're always looking out, so we're always manipulating, right? We're always manipulating life, relationships, work, place where we, you know, house, we're always manipulating everything because we think if we can get more of that, then I can be happier, then I can be more peaceful, and if I can just get rid of him or her or that, you know, then I'll be, you know. So that's where our focus always is, and those of you who've gone that path know it is endless. It is endless. You'll get temporary relief, and then you'll find the same problems come back. So that is why it is this internal looking. You know, when I look in myself and I see what within me is the source of happiness, well-being, peace of mind. When does that occur within me and how does that occur? In the same way, when does suffering occur in me? What is the source of my anger? What is the source of my resistance to life, frustration? What are the source of my fears and anxieties? Why do they arise in me? My sadness, my hurts. And we begin to look at the internal process, because this is the place where they're arising. And again, to do that, one doesn't have to read anything. One could get some simple instructions from one's teacher and pursue this reflective path. When one understands that that is the primary purpose of a spiritual path, it is experiential, it is real, and it is inwardly focused, then all the other things we do, all the reading, the study, all the good works, all the, now have a context that transformation can occur and one's life can really be a representative outflow of one's true understanding of oneself. Is that clear? As opposed to the way most people do it, is we have this kind of traditional foundation of all our conditioning and all our issues, all our stuff, right? And we're kind of creating this other spiritual structure on top of that, and hoping nobody really sees the part that we see, right? that's not very healthy. And that has many problems, building a new life like that. If one really wants a new life, which means a life where there is real happiness, where there is real deep sense of well-being and peace, and the heart is really open, you know. Kindness is not just something we do. Compassion is not something we do. Service is not just something we do, but that it flows naturally from a heart and a mind that is awakened. And a heart and a mind that's awakened means it's awakened to itself. It knows itself. It knows how to be itself. It knows what has needed to be healed. And it has changed. Again, as it's said in Zen and Buddhism, the only difference between an ordinary being and a Buddha is one is awake and one isn't. One truly knows themselves and one doesn't. When an ordinary person like us awakens to who and what we truly are, then we are Buddhas. It's as simple as that. So this transformation goes on in our minds, and outwardly nobody, you know, we're not going to look different. If you think that when you become awake, you're all of a sudden one day going to wake up and look like this, that's not what it's about. It'll still look like you. But your mind will change, and the way you see things will change, and your heart and mind will be different. You should stop pursuing words and letters and learn to withdraw and reflect on yourself. When you do so, your body and mind will fall away naturally, and your original Buddha nature will appear. Don't get scared. You'll go, oh, my body and mind fall away. I'm just going to dissolve and become a nothing. And he's not saying that. At this point, we live in a world where we clearly identify ourselves as our bodies. This is me. This person I see in the mirror, this person I dress, this is me. Which, of course, is not true, because this body was the gift of our parents. This is their creation. We had nothing to do with it. And it is just a temporary form. Right? It will pass. And we will all pass at one point. But we think I am my body, and I think I'm my mind, which means all my thoughts about who I am. We have these memories of our life that we've woven together as a story. This is who I am. This is what I've done. We have these identifications about who I am and the way people think of me and the way I think of myself. And we have all these ideas about our future, and we have ideas about everything, right? And we have our likes and we have our dislikes and we have our hopes and our fears, and we have these endless created story about ourselves that occurs and lives in only one place, in our thoughts. It is our own creation. So this body and this mind is what we totally identify with. That is why it's such a rocky road in this life. But we have lost touch with our true nature, our original nature, from which all this sprung. All these identifications, all these thoughts, all these things, we didn't have them when we were born. When we were born, we were totally alive, totally present, and yet we had no concepts, we had no stories about what we were, but yet we were quite capable of what? Of being happy or sad, of smiling or crying. So the whole story about who we are developed over the years, and we've come to identify so strongly with it, we don't we don't really see that underneath this all, covered up by this all, is this very aware, present, open, spacious mind. It has gotten so clogged up. It's like a pipe that's gotten so clogged up that nothing can flow through it anymore. That is why we often feel stuck. That is why we often feel stale. That is why we don't feel an aliveness moment to moment. So we have to kind of fill our life up with what? Endless activity to feel alive. But we know when we were children, we didn't have to do that, did we? Children are quite capable when they're young of just being there and finding happiness and meaning in just the simplest kinds of activities. But we have grown away from that. We've become adults. So when it says your body and mind will fall away naturally, which means your obsessive identification and attachment to what to your thoughts and to your body, when you let go of those, then your original nature. It's like when the clouds lift, the light of the sun just naturally is there. We don't have to do anything, do we? Our original mind is shining right now. All of us right now, everyone here who is listening and seeing, it is your original awareness mind that is the that is functioning, that is allowing you to see and hear and think and feel. And none of us have the slightest idea how to create that. Science has no idea how to create awareness. It is the great mystery, and yet it is the gift that all of us were given at birth by our parents. It is the greatest gift they gave us. But we are so focused on the objects, the drama, the thoughts, that we do not see this wondrous mechanism of awareness that is present always. And your original Buddha nature will appear. So let us move on to the second one. Sitting quietly, doing nothing. Spring comes, grass grows by itself. Right? If there ever was a poem that was so un-American, it could be this one. I mean, can you? I mean. sitting quietly doing nothing. I mean, that's un-American. And that things will just happen by themselves. I don't have to be doing. There doesn't have to be this incredible achievement-oriented, got to get it done, got to make it happen. Isn't that what we're about? Sitting quietly doing nothing. Right? So, spring comes and grass grows by itself. That is pointing us in the direction of what? Just the unfolding of life. Things just happen, right? Spring comes of itself, right? We can't make it come faster. We can't make it go away. It comes in its own time. It comes in its own way. Isn't that true? And whether we're running around frantically, waiting for it, whether we're sending up smoke signals and doing all kinds of stuff and doing all kinds of incantations and everything, it's still going to come in its own way. And when it comes, what's going to happen? The green grass will grow. This shows that there is a natural unfolding in life. And that natural unfolding in life is something we all participate in. If you think about your own life, all the pushing and pulling, that endless pushing and pulling, and yet, what? When you look back on your life, you can see it just unfolded, didn't it? One thing led to another. And all your worrying and all your frustrations and all your planning and all, right? Often had very little to do with the way things unfolded. Isn't that true? And yet we think, if we're not actively controlling, manipulating, planning, worrying, it's like somehow, it's not going to unfold. This is an invitation to what? To relax. And to understand that life is unfolding, moment to moment. It doesn't mean we are passive objects. We can respond. But this tight-fisted approach, this manipulative approach, this driven approach, which is so exalted in our society, is a path of what? It's a path of unhappiness. It's a path of frustration. It's a path of just look out for number one. It's not a path that leads to happiness. It's not a path that leads to peace of mind. It's not a path that leads to open-heartedness. It's not a path that leads to compassion, does it? Sitting quietly, doing nothing. Again, this doing nothing does not mean, again, you're just sitting around all day. Right? I mean, please don't go home and go, well, I'm going to quit my job and stop cleaning house, stop cooking, I'm just going to spend my life just sitting quietly, doing nothing. I like this. If that case would be sitting quietly doing nothing, I get fired from my job, and I begin to notice that I'm starving to death. So again, that will be another kind of natural unfolding. This poem, Sitting Quietly Doing Nothing, Spring Comes, Grass Grows By Itself, I think points to a very key part of living a life of wisdom, which is we have to see the big picture. We have become a small picture people. We go just from incident to incident, crisis to crisis, deal to deal, project to project, And we've lost sight of the big picture. Right. I think somebody on a spiritual path sees the big picture. It is the big picture that gives us meaning and direction in the small picture of day-to-day activity. The world of choices. The world of decisions. Right? The world of what to do. What do I do? When we see the big picture and we know generally the direction we're going, the day-to-day stuff becomes much easier, much simpler. And we know, there are times to push and there are times to fall back. There are times to step forward and there are times just to stay where one is. And it's all easy because one sees the bigger picture. One's not trying to force things. One understands that the most important thing in life is what? Getting ahead, making more money, getting power over. What's the most important thing in life?
Being present.
Being present. And why do we want to be present? Yeah, so we can see the unfolding, and then when we're present and we can see the unfolding, then we are, how do we feel? Happy. Human beings no matter how, you know, whatever sector of society they are at. If you ladder it that way, why do you do this? Why? Well, at the end they think what? Yeah, I'll be happy. Life will be meaningful. I'll feel good. Well, that happiness, that sense of well-being, and that purpose and meaning in life is already right here. We don't have to jump through endless hoops to get there. It is because we're jumping through endless hoops in life that we're not there. This is very simple. Sitting quietly, doing nothing, spring comes, grass grows by itself. We can take care of our bodies, we can harm our bodies, but at the end of the day, our body has its own life, doesn't it? And that life of our body is a mystery to us, isn't it? Our body has its own life that's unfolding. That is often a source of frustration to us. We like to control things, right? We get very frustrated when our body gets sick, because why? Because there are things we need to be doing, right? Things I'm supposed to be doing today. And yet our body has its own unfolding. We're often frustrated with other people because they're not the way we want them to be, or life is not responding the way we want it to be, or, right, endlessly like that. Everything, everyone has their own natural unfolding. And when you put 6 billion people together on a planet, that creates another kind of unfolding, positive and negative. But it's an unfolding. And we have to, if we want to change the direction of this world and this planet, we have to listen to this poem. Because all our doing, all our frenetic activity, we are destroying our planet, aren't we? We are not creating happiness among the people of this world. We know even in our advanced civilizations here in the West, and we know in the up-and-coming situations, economies in the third world, that an increase in physical and mental and emotional illnesses are part of it, aren't they? Well, that tells you something. Right there. And then the third one. To cry and not be carried away by tears, to laugh and not be carried away by laughter, is the way. It's quite beautiful. And this is really the beauty of Zen, because these deep, meaningful truths are expressed in the most simplest way, and they come back to where it's most important, which is where? Our life. How does one live a life of truth? How does one live? And here, when they say, is the way, they're talking about the way of awakening, the way of the Buddha, the way of truth. To cry and not be carried away by tears, to laugh and not be carried away by laughter, is the way. So the way of awakening is not, it doesn't occur somewhere else. The way of awakening, the way of returning home, will express itself in our life, in our very human life. But it will be different. This is very profound. Because when one has returned to one's natural self and has uncoupled one's emotional life from the life of this endlessly obsessing, ruminating, melodramatic mind, endlessly creating stories. That's where our emotional life, that's what's fueling 95% of it. Our own obsessive, out of control thinking and imagining and ruminating of the past and imagining the future, you know. But if you think about all that gone, just for a moment, and your mind is very open and relaxed, then you what? Then you again, like the coming of spring, right? When spring comes, the grass grows, right? Can you see they are one? The grass has no existence separate from the sun. It is dependent on the sun for its life. They arise together. In the same way, when our emotions are allowed to flow freely in the present without all the contamination of endless thought, when something is sad, we feel what? Sad. That's just very natural. When something is happy, we feel what? Happy. But these feelings are arising directly from experience. Is that clear? So it's like, for those of you who remember being a child, or those of you who have been the parent of children, we know that the life of a child is quite interesting, right? Because they have the capacity, let's say, of being very upset about something, right? Being angry or, you know, incredibly sad, you know, and crying. You know, and 10 minutes later, what? It's over. They're on to something else. Well, that gives us a sense of what a natural emotional life. Not the children, you know, have it all together. But what I'm saying is that gives us a clue to how emotions are naturally occur in response to a situation, and once the situation changes, the emotion will change. Is that clear? But if you think about your emotional life, our emotional life, it is fueled primarily by what? By what? Thoughts. Ruminating. Obsessing. Imagining. Right? And our poor emotional life doesn't know that nothing's really going on in reality. Right? That you're just thinking about something terrible that happened 25 years ago. Right? And your poor mind has no clue, you know, that it's malfunctioning and it starts getting sad, right? Or it starts getting hurt, or it starts getting angry, you know, over something that has passed, that doesn't exist in reality at all. Over and over, and we can do it for years. 10, 20, 100, 200, 500 times. And still we can create this dramatic emotional moment. In the same way, all our worries about the future that produce anxiety and fear, none of that is real. Again, that's all imagined. And yet, again, our poor bodies are racked with these kinds of emotions that have a very negative effect on its health and well-being. Right? Emotional life are meant, emotions are just meant to be things that arise and disappear according to situation. Is that clear? That is the natural life of an emotion. We need to free our poor minds and bodies from this. Anyhow, it's not healthy. It's not healthy. It is not natural. The mind of the Buddha, the true mind of all of us, is our natural mind. It's also called our natural mind. It is the mind uncontaminated by all the conditioning that has occurred. It is a mind free of habit energy. So it just is. It is what? It is present. 100% present to whatever is happening right now. It's not in the past. It's not in the future. It's not lost in the world of self-fabrication. So again, if we're asking, well then, what does this awakened Buddha mind look like? Right? So if I drop away body and mind, as Dogen says, if I learn to stop controlling and manipulating life, but learn to just, respond to things, what does that look like? When things are sad, we'll cry. And when things are happy, we'll laugh. And Zen, the master, said, when asked, what is the highest truth of Buddhism, he said, what? In winter I freeze, in summer I sweat. I mean, that's the beauty of Zen. He didn't give a highfalutin answer. He pointed to the natural unfolding of life. Right? And that is the challenge. How do we get out of our conditioning? How do we get out of the drama and the melodrama? How do we get out of the rat race and return to our natural self, our natural state of well-being and ease? And again, it doesn't mean we have to leave our life and leave our relationships. It means we have to do it differently. And again, that's what a spiritual path is about. It's not just about, changing the books on our bookshelf. It's not about learning a whole new vocabulary. So let me just read these again, and then I'm interested in your questions or comments. So Dogen said, you should stop pursuing words and letters and learn to withdraw and reflect on yourself. When you do so, your body and mind will fall away naturally, and your original Buddha nature will appear. And then the poem, sitting quietly, doing nothing. Spring comes, grass grows by itself. And finally, the teaching, to cry and not be carried away by tears, to laugh and not be carried away by laughter, is the way. So again, very simple, but very profound guidance for us in how to bring these teachings and practices into the immediacy of our life, relationships, families, work, society. So, questions, comments. How do you please think about your life and whether you see all this clearly about how to bring this into your life? Or maybe you think there's something exceptional about your life or about you that it's not possible. Perhaps you think, oh, this is good stuff in a meditation hall, on a Sunday morning. Right, but no. If you saw how I live my life, or where I work, or kind of people I got to deal with, this would never work. Please don't feel hesitant if you think this is a crock. We have to, these teachings should be very alive and real, and deserve to be challenged if they're too airy-fairy for you. So any questions about how to what these mean and how to practice? Yes.
I started a new job tomorrow, and I've been really worried that I won't be able to do my new job.
Okay.
So I don't know why to say that I'm worried about something that hasn't even happened yet.
Right.
I need to deal with the present and
different. Right. Yeah. So the issue was, she says, I'm starting a new job tomorrow, and I've been filled with just worrying about, can I do it? Can I learn it? And she's seeing things differently. Yeah. I mean, you know, the best preparation for tomorrow is to what? Is to be well rested and have your mind nice and open and relaxed, and right, and how to do it, and how, whether you can learn it or not, you will find out tomorrow. It will unfold, right? You don't have to make it unfold. It's you're trying to make it. Can you see we're trying to control it? We're already thinking about tomorrow. We have no idea how it's going to be, do we? I mean, unless you are 100% convinced that you have ESP and the power of prophecy and are always correct, in which case you should open up your own office or something, you know, unless you really think that, then we have to, get out of our grandiosity and realize we don't have a clue about how it's going to be tomorrow. You know, give it up. You know, does anybody really think they know how their life's going to unfold? How their significant others, their children, their parents, I mean, do they really know how it's going to unfold? The truth. I mean, you know, when we stop and we come into reality, which is something we do not spend a lot of time in, we're much more comfortable living in the world of our own imagination. But if we come into reality, we would have to say what? We don't have a clue. We don't even know how the rest of the day is going to turn out, do we? No. We will only know how the rest of the day will turn out as it unfolds. Is that clear? So, why not just, you know, wait? And be open and present and curious 100% to your life as it unfolds. Because that's where our life is. Is that clear? And if we are sitting here right now thinking about the job tomorrow, then we've given up our life for some kind of imaginary life. You know, that we don't have a clue about. So good. Yeah. Other questions about what these teachings or words have for our life, our relationships? Yes.
So he says, don't be scared. To let go.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
To let go of what?
Well, your ruminating mind to relax and to just feel the clarity, feel the clouds lifting. Right? Don't be scared. So when you have a thinking mind. So when you understand that there's problems, big problems.
Like what big problems?
Right in the world.
Give me an example of a big problem.
Well, the children coming from Honduras right now.
The children coming from Honduras right now.
Okay.
Just think what we do. So there are children coming to Honduras right now. Right?
Coming from Honduras.
Honduras, right. Okay. And they are coming because why?
The cartels are...
So there are reasons, so they're coming. And so they are here. And so something has to be done.
Right.
Right.
So I understand.
Hold on, right? Something has to be done.
Correct.
Okay. But that's not a problem. You see, we create these things and we call them problems. See, I don't think there are any problems in life. They're only life unfolds and there are things that have to be dealt with. It's a very different way of formulating it. I think when we turn things into problems, we take them out of reality and we turn them into some kind of mental event that then we have to obsess about. And whether it's the children in Honduras or whether it's climate change or whether, you know, it's, you know, I have a problem, you know, I don't know what to make for dinner, you know what I mean? I mean, we have all kinds of problems, right? But those are mental fabrications. I mean, the thing is, there's life. There's only life. And life is unfolding. And today it's the Honduran children, right? Tomorrow it'll be the what? We don't know, but there'll be something, I assure us. There'll always be something, because things are unfolding. Why are they unfolding? Because of causes and conditions, right? And either we get lost in this endless world of problems that weigh us down, and you know, or else we go, yeah, yeah. Well, of course there are 50,000 children. You know, it's amazing they're not 500,000 children. I mean, it's, you know, poverty, violence, you know. Yeah, creates great suffering. And people who are suffering will, you know, be do something.
So there's that desire popping up.
Desire to...
be proactive.
In terms of, be proactive in terms of what?
I guess be, you know, present to what's happening and feel the sadness, but not get caught up in it. But, you know, see it from a different perspective than I have in the past, which is getting weighed down by the, you know, burden and ruminating and...
Yeah, again...
I'm trying to translate.
So we have to be careful because... because of our mass media and the immediacy of information, I mean, and again, it is not minimizing the suffering of children of Central America. But how about the children of Syria? How about the children of Iraq? How about the children of Gaza? How about the children of the Congo? How about the, I mean, you know, how come we're not sad about them? Right? I mean, are they not worthy of our sadness? Yeah. So we have to be careful that our sadness is not manipulated by, you know, the sadness of the day. In this path that we follow, it's called the Bodhisattva path. And the Bodhisattva path implies a deep acknowledgement of the suffering of life. It, at all levels, and that many, 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 many people, I mean, are suffering. I mean, even people who are not suffering from violence and poverty, I mean, people who have it made are still suffering from what? Unhappiness. They're aging, they're sick, they're this, they're that. I mean, they're alone. They're... So suffering is epidemic. And so we want to see the big picture, so we're not always reacting to the small picture, right? Right? Which is why, you know, what is the cause of all this? Right? What is the deep cause of this suffering in this world? And if I really wanted to change, not situation to situation, right? You know, What do I need to do? So when we're clear about who we are and we see the big picture and our path is clear, it's not like we're walled off and it's not like we're indifferent. But we understand this unfolding of sad events in this life is going to continue. It cannot be otherwise. Because we live in a world where what? Where people don't care for one another. What? Where those who have want to hold on to what they have and not share it with those who don't. You know what I mean? It's, right? You know, when you have a world like that where people don't feel interrelated, interconnected, part of the whole, everybody feels separate, you know, this will happen. So we want to... create a different kind of culture that looks at this differently, looks at the world as a world that is interconnected, where we are not separate from each other, we are not separate from nature, we're not separate from, you know, it's all interdependent. And so therefore, the pain of others is our own pain. The suffering of others is our own suffering. Right? And but we want to look deeply, this goes back to the Buddha, what is the cause of human suffering? Right? It's the same way in our own life. And many of us just go from crisis to crisis, situation to situation, kind of bumbling along, thinking that this is, you know, the way it is. Until we one day stop and go, you know, what's really driving this? You know, that's what Dogen was saying. We need to stop, withdraw, and reflect. So we're not just going situation to situation to situation, sometimes up, sometimes down, sometimes up, sometimes down, sometimes up, sometimes down, you know, endlessly. We want to get out of that. And you get out of it by seeing the bigger picture. So when we act, when our compassionate heart brings us into the world of action, we're not doing it from anger, we're not doing it from despair. We're doing it from compassion, wanting to really help, because we understand that we are all connected. And we also understand that all our help may not do anything anyhow. Right? We don't know. Do we know? No. I mean, I recycle. Do I really know that's going to make a difference in the unfolding of the planet? I can't really say I do. Right? I'd have to admit it. But that's still no excuse not to recycle. But we don't know. All our good intentions may not come of much. But that doesn't matter, because we do that because that is the way to be. Are there other questions or comments before we end? Yes.
Your third point make me reflect on another thing, like that I received before.
Let bygones be bygones. Profound Zen teaching. Yeah, I mean, you know, Zen and Buddhism does not have the corner on wisdom. Right. Yeah.
My question is, what's the proper time for the conscience?
But listen what you said. You're already admitting that you're holding on. You see what I'm saying? That's the problem. Why are we holding on to it? Holding on acknowledges that by itself, these emotions will just come and go. I think you need to ask yourself, what is that holding on about? You know, it's funny, it's like when I used to be a therapist and people would come in all caught up in some drama, and I'd say to them, they're especially, divorce situation, just full of hate and anger, and I'd say, at some point you're going to have to let go of this, right? And they would say, yeah, I know, at some point I will. I'm like, yeah. At some point I'm going to get on with my life and I'm going to let go of this, right? And so I'd say to them, do you want to do it today? Or do you want to, or what's your plan? You're going to hold on for another month, 2 months, 3 months? Why don't we just come up with a date or something? It is kind of silly, isn't it? But so again, I think that's the issue. And I think you're right there is, again, we think it's normal to hold on to these things, right? Because when we get together with each other, we talk about all the things we're holding on to. It's a little bit like being in the insane asylum and, everybody can... It's kind of a shared hallucination that everybody agrees to. But when you stop and go, right? So you see how crazy what your question was, like, how long should I hold on to it? I don't know. How long would you like to hold on to it? Is it giving you great pleasure and happiness?
I can just walk away from it.
You can't just walk away from what?
feelings.
Hold on. Whose feelings are they? They're your feelings. So don't you have a right to deal with them in a healthy way? Your feelings, like thoughts, come and go. They don't want to stay. How do we know that? Because, just as you say, you realize that if you didn't keep reliving the situation, these feelings would not arise, would they? I mean, that's an acknowledgement of the truth. We have to see that it is our own out-of-control mind that is endlessly ruminating, replaying, re-going over and over and over the same stuff that is then fueling it. And after a while, it seems to have a life of its own. We say, well, that just, you know. No. When that situation was over, our mind was ready to move on. Right? Because in reality, it was over. Whether it was good or bad. You know, whether what happened yesterday was the happiest experience of your life, or what happened yesterday was the saddest experience, right? Whether yesterday you were very calm with somebody, or you were very angry. Either, whatever it was, it is over. Would you agree with me, in reality? Yeah. And the mind is right here, ready to be alive to the present. The only way you can maintain that emotion is by what? Reliving it. It is a mental event that we are the creator of. But our minds are out of control, as you might have noticed, and they'll just, it's just habit energy. We just keep cycling and recycling. And when we understand that, we then learn to deal with things differently. But we understand, yeah, again, for many of us, this is a very new message. We just think, well, this is just normal. Things just keep playing over and over and over. They don't. Again, you have children. When they were little, they didn't. They got angry, and 10 minutes later, they were happy. They were happy, and 10 minutes later, they were sobbing. Right? Bizarre. We were like that. But as our minds developed, they just got out of control because we realized we could keep it going forever. Right? Forever. Right? There are people 80 years old on their dying day, you know, still feeling bad about things that happened 75 years ago. That's sad, isn't it? Yeah. So good. So these are interesting teachings. We should end now.